All right, so everybody has phobias. Everybody know what that word means? Fears? Arachnophobia. Everybody know what that is? Fear of spiders. Some phobias aren't worth the effort, but some of them are worthwhile having. What about the fear of getting burned? That's hot. Don't touch it. Probably a good idea not to touch it. So there was a city lawyer that had to go out to the country one day and visiting a farm, and a blacksmith is on the farm. He's making up a batch of horseshoes, hammering them out, and once he gets one done, he kind of throws it in a small pile over there, and you know, lawyer's kind of intrigued, but not overly bright about country life. Walks over to that pile, is kind of looking at him, picks one up, drops it right back down. The blacksmith said, "Did you get burned?" Lawyer, you know, he's got away with words. He just says, "No, I just didn't need that long to look at it." What about the fear of being bit by a snake? Or a tiger? Probably a healthy fear. I don't know if you've seen it. There's more than one video out on the internet, but one in particular, a lady decided to cross one barrier at a zoo, go up to the secondary barrier where there's a polar bear pen, and wants to interact with them for some reason, right up against the fence. And the polar bear was able to reach out, grab her leg, and then latched onto her hip with his teeth. I don't know where her fear of being bit was at, but she could have used it that day. What about the fear of falling off a cliff? It comes in handy every now and then. So when I was, a real late teen, probably about 19, a group of us with church, we were up in the UP and we were shuttling, me and a friend, we were, even though we're somewhat young drivers, being 19, why we were chosen by a couple sets of parents to shuttle younger teens up to Orr, Minnesota for church camp. And we got up there, we dropped one set of kids off, and we were picking another set, bringing them back home. And on the way back home, just as we entered Michigan or the UP, why we decided to stop and look at a waterfall that we'd heard about. And we found that we had to kind of go through the woods, a few hundred yards. We come out to the top of this waterfall, and the waterfall is probably about 70, 80 feet tall. So it's nothing to sneeze at. And we decided that the side of the bank we were on, we couldn't see it all that well. But if we got to the other side, the other bank, and come up to the lip of the falls, we could see a lot better. So we went upstream, you know, maybe a couple hundred yards, and the water got much lighter. And we were able to literally just wade across. So we did that. All of us. I think there's probably close to 10 of us. And we got to the top of the falls, and there was some rocks kind of in the water, but not in the major part of the stream, the rushing stream anyways. And a couple people looked down and said, "You know what, we could climb down alongside the falls. There's a crevice here." And so a couple of them started doing that, and I was going to do the same thing, but I was going to be the last one. And two of the girls decided, they're standing at the top of the falls, looking down, watching them already climbing, and they decided they were not going to do that, that they didn't want to risk mountain climbing. And so I started down, and I only got a few feet, and I heard a strange noise. I heard kind of a groan from somebody, and then I heard what I thought was a fairly large boulder hitting the cliff alongside me, and then I hear a splash, and I look, And there's one of my friends doing the dead man's float down in the water. One of the girls had fallen down. And in the long run, she was all right. But I, thankfully, because I was still up on the, or climbing down at the time she fell, the other two that had went down before me, they were able to dive in the water to retrieve her. And then as they approached where I was coming down the cliff, they couldn't get out of the water because the rocks were really rounded and just full of moss. I mean, there was just nothing to grab hold of. And so if one of us hadn't have been still on land, they would have had a tough time getting out of the water. So I kind of pulled her up onto my lap, and I sat back, and her back was against my chest, and she really hadn't come to yet, at least mentally. She was breathing. When we pulled her out of the water, she was not breathing. But I looked down, and there was a huge protrusion out of her jeans at her hip, and it was obvious that her hip or her thigh bone was broke. And then I needed to reposition her or something, and I literally grabbed her head from the side and kind of pulled her forward just a little bit, and then I realized she had a huge gash on the top of her head and was just bleeding profusely out of that. So we prayed immediately over the whole situation, and two of the other guys, teens, were able to run probably about 3/4 of a mile and found help, in a sense. And it took, emergency vehicles probably a good half hour to get to us. And then they rappelled down the cliff and literally had to walk her out by walking downstream about a half mile before they could get out of the canyon, in a sense. They got her to the hospital, and of course they've left ahead of us, so we don't know what kind of shape she's in. We just know what hospital she's going to be at. So, a little bit later on, we make it to the hospital. We're very concerned. And we get there, and they said, she's fine. And I even said, what about her hip? What about it? She's got a bad bruise. But we went and visited her. This is maybe an hour after, well, a little bit more than an hour after the accident. And there was no protrusion out of her hip. So God, I have no doubt that God healed a very broken bone there. She made national news for falling off the waterfall. Was mentioned on Paul Harvey. But there's some fears that we should have that will keep us safe from time to time. Then there's some fears that we shouldn't have. And we probably should understand the differences, but let's dive into something in Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy 14, verse 23, in the presence of the Lord your God, in the place that he will choose as a dwelling for his name, you shall eat the tithe of your grain, your wine, your oil, as well as the firstlings of your herd and flock, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. So in this verse, we see some detail as to some things that we should be doing. Some things are commanded. Some things are expected of us. But we kind of broke into the middle of something, so just make sure we understand what this is referencing. Just go back up one verse, to verse 22. And it says, set apart a tithe of the yield of your seed that is brought in yearly from the field. So what's this passage? The main reason for this passage? What we call the festival tithe. We're supposed to set aside money so that we can keep God's appointments. But that's not what we're going to focus on today. What we're going to focus on is the why of verse 23. You go back and look at verse 23. What's the last statement, the last phrase? Why do we keep the appointed feast? So that we may learn to fear the Lord our God always. Moses had just come down from Mount Sinai with the second set of tablets containing the Ten Commandments. Remember, he was up there for 40 days and nights retrieving the first set, comes down, finds the golden calf, and smashes the first set on them. And then if you remember that part of the story, Moses has to call out who is for the Lord, and it was the Levites that raised their hand. And then the Levites were sent out to do what? To kill 3,000 who decided to worship another god. Before all that had happened, remember that God had come down to Mount Sinai to talk to the people. We can read that. Let's go back to Exodus 20. Exodus 20 and starting in verse 18. When all the people witnessed the thunder and the lightning, the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, they were afraid and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, "You speak to us and we'll listen, but do not let God speak to us or we'll die." So there's fear coming into play again. And what does Moses tell the people? Verse 20. He says, "Do not be afraid, for God has come only to test you and to put the fear of him upon you so that you do not sin." We'll keep going. But so that we see that the Israelites were developing a fear of God, but I'm not certain it's the same fear that was referenced that we just read in Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Because by now, the Israelites have witnessed all the plagues back in Egypt. There were some scary things that took place then, whether it affected them firsthand or not. They've watched the drowning of the Egyptian army as God closed up the water. And as we just read, they've heard God's voice, his trumpet, his thunder, saw his lightning, and they just experienced the death of 3,000 due to the making of the calf and worshiping of it. But that is not the fear that's referenced when it comes to our full participation of God's feast. So the word fear in Deuteronomy 14, verse 23, the Hebrew is yare. It is to fear, but morally to revere. So God's put his annual appointments in motion for us because he wants to spend intimate time with us during his feast so that we can learn more about his loving nature towards us, that we might revere him, have respect for him, show affection towards him, have awe, want to honor and esteem him. He has these appointments so that we can realize, recognize that he is all-powerful. He can be very scary to those that do not want to walk his path. But he is also all-loving and showers that love on those that do want to walk in his path. So is there somebody that's been in your life? Maybe they're still here, maybe they're no longer here. That was steadfast, strong, powerful, had a powerful presence about them. And yet you looked up to them and you loved them. Maybe it was a grandparent, a parent, aunt, uncle, maybe a teacher, a mentor. Those types of individuals, we wanted them in our life. We needed their approval. We needed their affection. And each time we got to spend some time with them, we left better. Maybe emotionally, maybe spiritually, physically, knowledge-wise, maybe more wisdom. And the other side of it is, because they meant so much to us, we never wanted to disappoint them or hurt them. That's what it means when it says the fear of the Lord. Do we understand His love for us to the extent that we don't want to disappoint Him or hurt Him? That we want to spend time around Him constantly? Let's go to Psalms 19, verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. And the fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. So here we see that the fear of the Lord has to do with how we react to His commands, His law, His righteousness. We're starting to see that our reverence of God will always be combined with our walk in His path. Realizing that keeping His commands is in our best interest at all times because of His tremendous love for us. Let's go to Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10 and verse 27. The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be short. A lot in one sentence there. Go to Proverbs 14, verse 26. Proverbs 14, verse 26. In the fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence, and one's children will have a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, so that one may avoid the snares of death. And also in Proverbs 14, go up to verse 2. Those who walk uprightly fear the Lord, but the one who is devious in conduct despises Him. So that means we are not showing our love, our adoration, our affection, our awe, our fear of God, when we come up with excuses as to why we don't need to do or we didn't do it His way. That person that meant a lot in your life, how much effort would you put into another opportunity to spend time with them? We started out by reading a passage that we are to keep His feast by going to a place where He chooses to place His name, and we're to set aside a tithe throughout the year so that we can make that journey in comfort and joy. An opportunity to spend intimate time with the one who loves us the most, the one who strengthens us the most, who lifts us up and causes us into success. Proverbs 14, verse 2 again. Those who walk uprightly fear the Lord, but the one who is devious in conduct despises Him. That word devious means as when we devise what we think we should be, or what should be a legitimate excuse for not following his commands. What kind of love or honor are we showing, or reverence? When God invites us to his table as a special guest, and we make an excuse as to why we can't be there. Maybe we shouldn't be there. Well, about the end of October, here just in about a month. Some of us have heard, I don't think anybody here feels this way, but we hear the comments, oh, it's just some fun costumes, some decorations, some candy. And if we hold it in a church parking lot, it's all about God. It's an excuse, a devious excuse. Proverbs 8 and verse 13. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. So the fear of the Lord is not so much being afraid of God, because he did make everything, which means he can destroy everything. But the fear of the Lord that we're looking at today is being terrified of not being in his presence. You know, when we think about our spouse, our child, maybe our parents, a best friend, we desperately don't want to lose opportunity for their presence. The fear of the Lord, we hate what he hates, and we love what he loves. That means we put great effort into fleeing away from evil, and we put great effort into loving what he loves. Total action. You can call it works if you want. In Hebrews 1 and verse 9, it's talking about our Savior, but it says, you have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness beyond your companions. Here's a big question for us. Are we tolerating sin in our lives or sin around us and yet claiming, maybe hoping, or presuming that we're righteous, but yet still tolerating that sin in or around us? That is not the fear of God. If we want God's presence to be greater in our lives, we need to stop tolerating sin. This very much includes the making of excuses for sin. The fear of the Lord is our constant desire for God in our lives. Desire that there is no void whatsoever of him in our life. A fear of that kind of void. This takes a lot of time and effort to develop. A number of years ago, I had those voids in my life. Voids of God. There was times when I invited him in, wanted him in, but there was also some big chunks of time when I didn't care if he was there, wasn't aware whether or not he was there, didn't ask him to be there. And over time, I considered all the ways that he's blessed me and my family. I watched him bless my friends, other brethren, even strangers. To the point that I realized I don't want to be ever outside of his blessing. Because in those times in my life, when I'm outside of his blessing, it's not simply that I lack his blessing, but I realize I'm actually in a state of curse. Any part of life without the Creator is cursed, period. We can use the analogy of a houseplant. Plant will not grow if it's not watered. But the process didn't stop with stunted growth. Didn't get any water this week. So it just didn't grow this week? No, there was a process that was going on. A process that continues. Because a plant without water dies. However, a plant that's cared for by the Creator is placed in a perfect environment for life with abundance. Not just mediocre life, but life with abundance. Because that plant is put in the right soil. It's watered at the right intervals. From time to time, it's fertilized. And if weeds start growing up around it, the weeds are plucked away. It's lovingly cared for and even admired. That's us. If we choose to allow our Creator to take care of us. These days, I desperately want God in every facet of my life. That doesn't mean that I'm 100% at this, but I certainly put a lot more effort into it than I used to. I'm not patting myself on the back, but there's a couple of goals I put in my life, some that I've shared. I turned 50 here a handful of years ago, and I told myself I would not go over 200 pounds. Not going to do that. It's not good for my body. It wouldn't be good for my health, and it would probably shorten my lifespan, plus cause complications. That doesn't mean I am not, or that I'm still not overweight. I'm just not as overweight as I could be. I've never missed a single feast in my life. It's a record I don't want to break. I will put much effort into keeping that record intact. So every year, every feast, I put some prep time into it. God gave us the sixth day, or Friday, as a day of preparation for the annual feast, or excuse me, the weekly feast, the weekly Sabbath, the seventh-day Sabbath. It's a day we should be getting ready for the Sabbath. We're finishing up our work. 6 days shall you work, do all of your labor. But there's things today that we can do to make our Sabbath easier or more holy. Fill up the car with gas. Grab all the groceries from the store that we need. Maybe help get dinner around so that when Sabbath, comes at sundown, everybody's ready to relax and wind down. But today I also do that same kind of preparation when it comes to the feast. More than a month out, I start preparing however I can or wherever I know I need to. However, these days I'm also very aware that I can't and won't think of every detail that might be needed in that preparation. I also need his blessing. This week, my truck battery died. I was working at a friend's house. I went to lunch, come out with my lunch in my hand, jump back in my truck, Suburban, started it up, no issues. Sitting there eating my lunch and scrolling through Facebook for a couple minutes, and it just dies. The engine just quit. Like, well, that was really strange. Maybe it was just a little hiccup in the gas. So I finished eating my lunch. I wasn't concerned about it. A few weeks ago, though, I'd put new tires on the truck, put new shocks on the truck. I felt like I did what I could, but then thought about that fact that I still need God's blessing. So I literally prayed to him and said, Father, everything that I know of that maybe I should do preparing for this drive down to Florida and back, I think I've got it done. And I asked him, is there anything else I should be aware of? And would you show that, to open my eyes to it? A week later, after I asked him that prayer, I was aiming the headlights on the truck. They'd always been just ever so slightly too high, so I wanted to drop them down just a little bit. And as I was under the hood, I looked at the battery, and it dawned on me, it's like, huh, I put that battery in when I first bought the truck. That was 4.5 years ago. That battery's getting tired. But it was a tiny little thought, and it got stuck way to the back. It wasn't like, I need to do something with it right now. The other day, as I pulled into the spot, it was at Costco. I pulled in front first. There's another car in front of me. I stopped, put it into park, and the car in front of me pulled out. And for some reason, I thought, I'm just going to pull forward so that my hood was out. Now I could just pull out when I got done. My engine had died while it was just idling. Before that, most batteries will give you a little hint that they're not happy. Every time you try starting it up, it's just slow, low, 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 and then finally it fires up. No hints at all like that. It was idling, it stopped, and then when I'd finished my lunch, I turned the key and all I got was that click, click, click. I'm like, well, that's really strange. I didn't know what to think about it at first, but I was at Costco. Costco has batteries. In the back of my truck was every tool that I needed. Don't need very many tools for it. In less than 20 minutes, I was on my way. Was not a big deal at all. I realized very quickly that my loving Father had once again answered one of my prayers. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but I know no one has to convince me in any way that was my Father blessing me. Because without that blessing, that battery could have died on the trip. In the middle of nowhere, in one sense. You know, there's some stretches through Tennessee and going into Georgia where you're a half hour, 45 minutes away from really the nearest, you know, car part store, place that you could buy a battery. Who do I call? Well, I got towing on my insurance, but now we're talking about a 2-3 hour setback and more expense because you call somebody to come get, you know, bring the battery to you. I realized my Father had spared me from something much worse because it wasn't in the dead of winter when it took place. It wasn't on an early Sunday morning when no one's open. I'm greatly loved, and I don't want to be outside of his presence or his blessing. Psalms 25 and verse 14. The friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him, and he makes his covenant known to them. Remember that. Friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him, and he makes his covenant known to them. Before we touch back on that, so what does the proper fear of the Lord, how does it manifest itself? What does it look like? We got five ways that the proper fear of the Lord will manifest itself. The first one, we obey God instantly. No more excuses. No more procrastination. When we understand that God wants something, commands something, desires something that we're to do, we do it. Years ago, I had a close friend that had friends. They had their first child. And I didn't care for their parenting all the time. One day I was over visiting, and we were outside, and they lived on a fairly busy road. Traffic flew by, 60-plus miles an hour, two-lane road. And they sat back away from the road a decent amount. And we're outside, and the three-year-old starts running towards the road. No big deal. Any of us can catch up to them really fast. Mom and dad don't get up and make a move. They yell at the child, "Come back here." The child keeps running, but turns around, looks at them, and laughs. It's a game. And keeps running towards the road. Now they understand that there could be a situation developing, and so they yell a little bit louder, a little bit firmer. "Come back." Kid just keeps running. What's going to happen here? Possibly. She's waiting for her kid to make the right decision, a three-year-old. Three-year-old that doesn't have any clue what a car, a truck, can do to them. They're playing a game. The three-year-old is. "I want mom and dad to chase me again." And I said something about, how come your daughter doesn't come back when you tell them to come back? "Oh, she's still learning that." "How is she learning that?" "Well, we want her to make the choice on her own so we don't discipline." And I said, "So one of these days, your daughter's going to run out into the road and get struck and killed because you wouldn't give a little swat on the behind when they didn't turn around and come back immediately." My friend said, "I can't do that. My parents were that way. They were too hard on me." "But you're still alive." We need to obey God instantly. How else does the proper fear of the Lord manifest itself? We obey him even when it doesn't make sense. We don't have to have all the knowledge. The timing night may not feel right. The results that we're seeing with our own eyes may not feel or look right. The cost may seem to be out of whack. Don't worry about it. If it's what God wants, get her done. Next way that the proper fear of the Lord manifests itself: we obey him even when it hurts. Remember the story of the rich young ruler that approached Christ. Said, what else can I do to enter your kingdom? Christ reminded him, keep my commandments. And he answered truthfully. He says, since I was a child, I have done all that. And Christ agreed with him, you have. There's just one more thing I'd like you to do. Sell everything you have and give it to the poor. His answer was, that would hurt too much. I'm not ready to do that. Not thinking about the fact that maybe Christ wanted to bless him with something even greater, even more. We see over and over in Scripture where Job, story of Job, he ended up with more. But it still hurt. Next way that the fear of the Lord manifests itself in us, we obey him even when we don't see a benefit. Story of Jonah. Jonah understood what God was asking him to do. Jonah didn't understand the benefit. Those heathens, they're not going to listen to me. Why would they listen to me? In fact, I'm going to show up there. I'm a foreigner, not simply a foreigner, I'm an enemy. And I'm going to start telling them what they need to be doing to get right with God. They're going to come after me. There's no benefit in this for me. There's no benefit in this for them. Last way that the proper fear of the Lord manifests itself, we obey him to completion. Not halfway, not to our standard, his standard, all the way. Genesis 22 and verse 10. Genesis 22 and verse 10. Then Abraham reached out his hand, took the knife to kill his son, but the angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from him. Do you see the phrase? Now I know you fear God. Do you think Abraham was doing this out of petrified fear of God? If I don't do this, God's going to do much worse to me? No. He did it out of awe and reverence to God. When we read that whole story, we see that shortly before, Abraham told some servants, you stay here, me and the lad are going to worship the Lord on the mountain, and we both will return to you. He didn't understand how God was going to do it, maybe why God was going to do it, but he understood God wasn't out to get him. Abraham did the five ways that the proper fear of the Lord manifest. He obeyed God instantly. The next morning, early, he got up and got Isaac, his servants, the wood, and took off. He obeyed God even though it didn't make sense. He obeyed God even when it hurt. And he obeyed God even if he was uncertain of the benefit. And he was willing to obey God to completion. Abraham was a friend of God's because he did all the above. John 15, verse 14. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that have heard that I have heard from my Father. Look at verse 14. You are my friends if you do what I command. It's a conditional statement. Much like when you enter a job contract with an employer, the employer says, if you work 40 hours for me, I will pay you this much money. Christ here says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. He's steadfast in his willingness to uphold his side of the bargain, the contract. Are we steadfast towards God as well? Or are we conditional? Well, I will if... Wait. Only when... Let me go do this first. You might as well stop calling him God, Lord, your Father, your Savior, if you're not going to do as he commanded. That's not who he is to you. God passionately wants to be our closest friend. But it's you and I that determines the intimacy of that relationship. Verse 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you to go out and bear fruit. Fruit that would last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask him in my name. So again, as we draw closer to God, he draws closer to us. The feasts are opportunities to spend intimate time with our loving, powerful Creator. Let's show our reverence and our honor and our love towards him by loving what he loves and hating what he hates, and showing up at the table that he's prepared for us, invited us to. Let's end up in Philippians 2. Philippians 2 and verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed me, not only in my presence, but much more now in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Let's take full opportunity of these feasts. Spend time with God. It's time to do a recheck on our lives. We got some evil we need to get rid of, weed out. Let's get it out. If there's more opportunity to ask more of his blessing, his favor, his guidance, his wisdom, let's do that. Let's get to the point where we're praying without ceasing. Let's get to the point where we know his word because we're in it every day. We've read it through cover to cover as often as we can. So not just once. Can we do that at least annually? To read the Bible cover to cover in 1 year, you need to read about 3 chapters a day. A lot of days, that's maybe 10 minutes. Some days, maybe it's 15. Some days, might only be 6 or 7 minutes. It's not a lot of time. First time you read it through, you'll get a little bit of grasp at what's in there. The 15th time you read it, you go, oh, wow, I haven't seen that before. You'll get a lot more. Don't stop. He loves us tremendously. He will place us in the environment where we will grow the best and live the longest for eternity. And not just simply in mediocrity, but in abundance. Enjoy the feast.